It's time for Blindly Obvious.
Hello and welcome to Blindly Obvious. I'm Tyler with my co-host Jeff, and today we are on the conversation of being afraid. Now, when Jeff brought this topic of conversation up, I immediately thought of the idea, you know, when you go downstairs in your basement, and you know, all the lights are on, everything's cool, no big deal, and you get to the steps, all the lights are out, you turn out the light, run up the steps, and somebody's always kind of behind you. Maybe that's just me, I don't know. What do you think, Jeff?
Does it bother you to walk into a dark room? Like, do you feel like uneasy or nervous or?
If it's somewhere I've never been. Okay. Like if it was like at my house and it was nighttime, no, I'd walk around here. No problem.
It's like a lot of us, we get creeped out. We go to a building that's not our home or even our home, but go into a certain room and we're freaked out and we almost run to the light switch.
Sure.
Why is that?
Well, I think for most people are obviously visual learners and everything they do is by their eyes. So when you take that away from them, they panic. It makes total sense to me. I mean, if you imagine, hey, I was just using my eyes to do everything. And then all of a sudden I came in this pitch black room where I can no longer use my eyes to do anything. What happens?
I guess that makes sense. Yeah.
You panic, yeah. Right?
Because light is a sense of control. Because at least you can see what's in the room as opposed to darkness. It could be anything.
Well, sure. And even if you're not controlling what's in the room, you can see what's in the room so you know where it is.
Yeah, that's just a sense of control, right?
Yes.
A sense. Okay, let me throw something at you. So everyone, whether you want to or not, whether you watch the news or not, we're all aware of current events and issues that I don't care who you are. You can be Mr. Rogers, Captain Positive.
Hey, man, speak for yourself. I've been sleeping. I just woke up from a slumber, so
yeah,
this is all new to me.
That's just a moment.
Ah.
But everyone knows about the wars in regards to, or I should say possible wars. You got
rumors of wars,
yes,
perhaps?
Yes. The Iran and Israel issue, which right. Who knows what's going to happen with that.
Well, then we don't really have to say rumors of wars.
No,
because we do have the Ukraine.
Yeah.
Russia conflict or situation.
They're now calling it possible war. Maybe it is a World War III.
Well, what is it at this point?
I think everyone's afraid to call it something.
Well, is this just like a ping pong match or what? Like, well, we've exchanged missile fire, but it's not war.
No, because of the type of weapons used, we've kind of crossed the Rubicon.
This just seems like a bunch of mumbo jumbo herky jerky BS, like, well, the experts haven't said it's war
and
yet.
That's
so
it.
We're
waiting for some authority to say, officially today we have crossed the
Rubicon. It's kicked off. Like, yeah. Somebody in a suit's got to come on and tell us it's happened.
Let's get ready to rumble.
Yeah. That's what we need. We need Bruce Buffer to get out here and tell us the fight is ready to be
all right,
on.
So, listen, here's the landscape, and there's more than this, but Israel and Iran, you got this whole issue with Russia and Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
Then over here on stateside, you know, we're kind of isolated. We got our own current issues with our border where we've got, they say, the CCP coming over, military age men. We've got Hamas. We got, what's the other ones? The other ISIS. They just said 16 different states are being overrun with gangs, Venezuelan gangs.
And I mean, in fairness, it's probably fair to say who isn't here at this point.
Right.
And what I mean by that is, like, there's probably a representative from, it's like the United Nations in here, man. We got representatives from 206 countries.
Oh, I'm sure they're here too. I'm sure they're here too.
And I mean, not just countries, obviously. I mean that as well as in terrorist organizations. And I don't know if you just captured the, I believe it was yesterday or maybe just a couple days ago, they were trying to have a hearing on the terrorist threats in the United States, and the director of the FBI and the Mayorkas, Mayorkas and Ray, they just skipped the hearing. They wouldn't even attend.
We are in such a weird place. It's got everyone kind of in this hyper, I don't know how you'd say this, being hypervigil, maybe is the word, hypervigil, where, you know, you are quick to turn on the news. Maybe before you were a little, nothing's going on today, but I'll still turn it on or I'll get to it.
Well, where does hypervigil become paranoid?
I think there's a fine line, right? That's what I'm saying is that,
because if you look backwards, I mean, you kind of like look at the 50s and the Cold War,
right,
Cuban Missile Crisis scare, and how close was or wasn't it, or, you know, was it all more of a theatrical show, or was it really as close as they thought it was?
I mean, I guess the hard part for you and I and everybody else who's not in the know, we don't have access to the confidential documents, and so we are left to trust the people we know who lie to us.
History is still told by the winner, man.
So, oh, no, absolutely.
So I don't I don't know if it's a, which is, this is probably something most people don't ever really think about, but like, I don't know if we ever get an absolute certainty
straight answer
in anything that we know.
Straight answer.
Because it's just impossible to know the other side of the equation of the non-winner, right?
Okay, so.
Because they're usually not both told together.
What you and I are both saying differently is that all the information we're getting is pre-filtered for us.
Mm-hmm.
You can't escape that there's some kind of bias in there. We've all got a bias.
Mm-hmm.
It's really difficult to know, to accurately gauge where we are. But I think everyone would agree, things are a little tense right now, right?
Sure.
Remember how we started this whole podcast world? Fear versus faith?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to stay grounded and... And I'm listening to all this stuff, and the truth be told, we've talked about it before, and maybe people should go back and listen to the very first podcast, but, you know, worry is one of those things that it's always trying to come back. Once you deal with it and push it out, it's always trying to come back home. It'll always try and encroach again. You know, here we are years away from having that podcast kind of revisit. How do you keep yourself grounded when everything around you seems to come unraveled?
I mean, I would say in this example, I guess, specifically, I just honestly myself don't really worry about it because there's nothing I'm going to do if that's what's happening. I mean, I obviously know that I don't believe in American citizens going to fight in wars that we aren't involved with. And I think many people also feel that way, that, hey, we're done. We're kind of done doing this whole endless war thing. I think we've voted in a candidate who stands for just that. He says the same things. He's not for these endless wars. He wants to bring them to an end. He was successful in doing so in 2016. I think that we've got a couple months here to hold on and really hope that this thing doesn't get wild and crazy and out of control. Now, could it? Absolutely. But what am I going to do to make a difference in that?
And I think that's the
and the answer in the short term is nothing.
Yeah, that's the... Probably the most honest thing to say is that me worrying about it's not going to fix anything.
Absolutely not.
It's just going to make everyone miserable.
Well, if anything, it almost kind of feeds into the situation, right? Because if everybody starts to worry as a collective, everybody kind of leans into that worry, and all of a sudden, oh man, something bad's happened. I know something bad's going to happen. And then boom, something bad happens. You confirm what you thought.
I don't think your worry is going to make it happen, but I think whether it does or doesn't happen, you sitting there fretting over it isn't helping anybody, because you're not in a, you and I and everyone listening to this podcast for the most part, unless we have some spooks, but but we don't have a say in it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a say in what Putin and Zelensky are going to do. Do you?
No.
Well, you're right. I just don't. I don't have a say in what people are coming over our border. I'd like to say I do. I'd like to think that I do. I'd like to think that the people I've voted into office are representing me and the values and the Constitution and Bill of Rights, and they've got things covered. Now, I know better. I know they don't. But in the end, in this present unraveling of what we're seeing in this world around us, worrying is not going to fix anything.
Nope. No, it's not.
You and I are Christians, and so want to revisit something else with this. Again, trying to help people to... Don't run from your problems and don't bury your problems through medication or alcohol or whatever, you know, or risky behavior, whatever your thing is to try and blow off steam and distract yourself. It could just be vegging on TV.
That's a good way to put it, to blow off steam and distract yourself.
Yeah, and that's not helpful, though.
Well, no, it's not helpful, but I think when you put it like that, that's a much easier way for somebody to frame that into their own life.
Right.
To where it doesn't feel near as attacking and jagged when you touch it. Not that you meant it that way. I'm just saying that when I can look at it as like, man, what do I do? What do I overdo to blow off steam and distract myself when I'm hearing too much noise? And then you think, well, man, maybe I do whatever that is a little too much.
Right. What it really amounts to is avoidance. You're just trying to avoid what you don't know how to fix.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you don't have control of the situation that could cause you anxiety does not mean that you have to avoid it altogether. What you got to do is frame it correctly, and it really helps believers in this, because there is somebody ultimately who is sovereign over his creation.
Absolutely. I mean, even if we just use that exact example right there, that there is someone sovereign over this creation, you look back over what's happened in just the past 6 months, and there's just so many things that I feel as though if you're looking for them, you see like, man, there could not be that many coincidences, right? To where like, it just seems as though like, it doesn't make sense. It's against the odds, but it was just like, God said, this was what was going to happen. And that's what was going to happen. And that's where I have that. I don't worry about these. Oh, there's going to be this. There's going to be that. The biggest bad. This person knows this. This person. We get so caught up in that. All of us in that nonsensical. I'm so certain of what I know and the person I trust, and I know they know. When in reality, we don't have a clue, man.
Right. We don't. At best, people we're trusting are pre-filtering our information and are assuring us only based on their own confidence that may or may not mean anything.
Here's a great example right here. If you were to ask people, hey, if somebody were to be shot, they fell to the ground, it turned out the bullet just nicked their skull, but they went down to the ground. Most people would have said, you're dead. You took a headshot, right? Well, it didn't. It just grazed his head. So does that make any sense for why that actually occurred? No, it makes no sense. Like he should be not even with us any longer, but just God said no. And that is the why you can't worry, in my opinion, is because it just ultimately doesn't matter. It's going to be what it is.
If God has purposed for you to have something he wants to give you, if he has a place for you to be, I don't believe there's anybody that can stand in that way. I don't think that you can block God, stop God. You can't straighten what he has bent. Let me say it that way. I think it's Ecclesiastes, and it says, what God bends, no man can straighten.
And look at, that's a great verse for the event I was just describing. After that assassination attempt, look at how I don't know if you want to call it the timeline or just the occurrence of things happening. Look how they changed. The average person who wasn't paying, you know, super, super close attention went, oh, like this is real. They just tried to kill this guy. Literally by a hair's edge, he's alive. Why? Like that doesn't make any sense. And then they started to see, look at how just the, like I said, the timeline of events has changed since that point. It can't be straightened out, right?
I don't think God is ever going, whew, that was a close call.
So once again, there's that like that mercy side of God.
Absolutely.
All right, hey, these people, they're not a lost cause. They do still get it when, you know, they're shown, hey, y'all are out of line.
God is not the God of second chances. He's the God of third, fourth, fifth. I mean, I don't know where the line is, but it is, there's
one. Well, that goes back to the passage we just talked about of how often should we forgive someone who's sinned against us, right? And what's he say? Basically it equates to 500 times if you have to, right? Like if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. And then you apply that to, man, how much forgiveness have I gotten? And you're like, we put a couple extra zeros on that 500, because that's probably not enough, right?
Right.
Of the times we've gotten it wrong with God.
What you're saying is that there's a part of us that's condemning ourselves and maybe our nation, saying, hey, you know, if that's what God's going to do to us, we got it coming. I know there were individuals, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they lived in a nation, Joshua and Caleb with the Israelites, while the nation fell under judgment, watch this, they were still saved. They were still preserved. Lot with Sodom and Gomorrah. Sodom and Gomorrah and the nearby cities and villages were burned, completely gone, obliterated, but Lot was spared. And there's a verse, I want to say it's in Peter, where it says, God knows how to save the righteous. And if you are living for him, according to him, and living your life with him, you're his. Are we in the last days? Is this the end? I don't know. Man, I don't have a clue. I know that there are certain signs we're told to look for, and I don't see all of them fulfilled.
Man, isn't the internet, though, just full of people who would tell you that? They're like, I am so sure.
Yeah.
It's this, and this have already happened. I know it's going to be next Tuesday.
I don't see it. I don't see it. And Jesus told his disciples in Matthew 24, in relation to the end, and this has been preserved for 2,000 years, for those of us who will be in the end time. So if we're in it, if we are, listen to what Jesus said. If we're not, it still applies, because what he doesn't say is be afraid. Oh no, cry and worry. Listen to what he says. It's Matthew 24. Many will come in my name saying, I am the Christ, and mislead many. You will be hearing of wars, actual wars, and rumors of wars. And then he says this, see to it that you are not frightened, for those things must take place. In other words,
it's going to happen no matter what.
Right, right. And he's telling you in advance, these things are coming, so don't worry. Why? Because God's in control. And just like we said it before, just as we remember the past, God remembers the future. In other words, some of the future's written. It's written.
When you can accept the fact that, I mean, we all like to be in control, right?
But we're not.
Things that we can feel like we do control. Yeah. But when you can accept the fact that, like, in the grand scheme, on the grand stage, even in the micro scale, you're also still not really in control, but you can feel more like you're in control. And I think the more wealth and resources you have, the more ability you can feel like you're in control in a bigger way, right? Once you realize, though, that in the grand scheme, you're not in control and you can surrender that's where I think real salvation is.
You have plans all the time for your day that get changed because you don't have control of all the variables, right? That's sure. Just a normal part. But exactly. No, back to this whole thing is that in the grander scheme here, you don't have control of the world events, over what an individual, let alone a nation, does. But God, somehow in his sovereignty, does. And the things that he has purposed will come to pass. And I'll say that again, will come to pass.
Hmm.
No one can avert his purposes, subvert the plans of God. It will happen just as he said. And he tells you, even going beyond these verses here, there's going to be earthquakes and famines. And again, nation's going to rise against nation. And he doesn't say, be afraid. No.
This is something I used to get caught up in. And this is a really cool conversation right here, is that I always used to go back and forth with you and be like, yeah, okay, well, even if this is the end, or maybe this is just man causing this all to happen. Like they've got, you know, capabilities to make weather change and outcomes. Sure. And you've always said, well, yeah, it could be. And I've never really grasped until, like, right, just sitting here right now, I'm like, man, the bigger picture is they're happening. It didn't say these will be caused by me.
Yeah, right.
These will be caused by some man named Jeff. Right. Like it doesn't say that.
It's just going to happen. It's just going to happen.
And what's happening? They're happening. Okay.
Let me read this Psalm 46. And this is, so we'll go Old Testament now. And it applies, again, why we don't worry. Because when you rest in the wing of the Almighty, it's like, I'm safe here.
I think it's fair to say that we shouldn't worry, because we all worry.
Yeah, no, we do. That's what I'm saying.
We shouldn't worry, but we all do.
If you successfully deal with it today, you banish it from your house and your yard, it's going to crawl back.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the issue.
Sure.
So here it is, Psalm 46. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth should change. Isn't it changing? And though the mountains slip into the heart of the sea, like an earthquake, though the waters roar and foam, though mountains quake at its swelling pride. And the whole point is, we will not fear. Why? Because God is our refuge. This God who is in control. He didn't just make it. He sustains it. He truly does control it. And he is your loving Father who knows how to rescue the righteous and has promised to. So rest.
What would you say to those who would ask, well, if God is in constant control, why does he allow bad things to happen to good people?
Because he allows people to choose right from wrong. And every choice we make has a good or bad consequence. And it does not just affect you, but everyone around you.
Okay. Now, how would you say that somebody would say, okay, well, God could just intervene in my choice sometimes, right? And he could say, no, you're not going to make that choice.
He could.
Or you're going to make this choice instead.
And he probably has. But I think your question is, why doesn't he always?
Yeah, I think I think that would be like a somebody would wonder, well, like, why doesn't he always intervene for me?
Like for example, let's get God in trouble. If God's a good God, then why do any children ever die? They should never die because children.
Why is anybody hungry?
Yeah,
or why? Yeah,
you should never
be
hungry because God's good and God protects those He loves and He loves all people, so you shouldn't be hungry. We miss the whole part that God has said, if you follow me, by the way, you're a devout follower. Think about Jesus. You're gonna suffer. He never says he never promises prosperity, that you will have a perfect life without any trouble and hardship.
Mm, and don't we often get that
conflated,
mixed up? Yeah. I think though, why we get it mixed up is because you're going to suffer just living a worldly life as well.
The difference is...
But you think if I come to Christianity, my suffering is over. And I don't have to suffer anymore.
The difference is, as a Christian, you get to decide, will you suffer for doing good?
Well, and you also have to decide that if you choose to follow a faith-based lifestyle, a Christian lifestyle, your suffering is also going to come to an end. Like, this will be the worst suffering you ever experience, right, versus the opposite is going to be, this is the best existence you will ever experience.
Let me say it this way. When you become a Christian and you actually follow the guidelines, the laws, the commands, the statutes that God's given us, which actually ensure the best life possible, when you do that, a lot of the stupid sufferings that would occur, could occur, are mitigated.
Give let's have a couple examples.
All right. If you practice chastity and you save yourself till marriage and your spouse did the same, you will never have to worry about getting gonorrhea syphilis.
Makes sense. Well, obviously you're getting rid of any chance of a sexually transmitted disease because neither of you have partaken in that act.
Correct.
Okay. Yep. That makes sense.
Right. I don't have to worry about some girl coming to me one day saying, hey, I have your baby and you owe me child support. Stealing.
I used to call you Jazzy Jeff.
It's stealing. No, that you're thinking of Fresh Prince, whatever, Bel Air.
Oh, the Fresh Prince. Yeah, that's right. Was that you?
That was not me. So there's built-in consequences for certain actions. I don't have to worry about those dumb things.
All right.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Now, with that, I said, we do get the choice of whether we'll suffer for doing good. For example, if I see a guy on the side of the road that looks hungry and I'm about to go to the restaurant and I got 10 bucks, I have a choice. I can go without a meal to give it to him.
Or less of a meal.
But the point is, I can suffer so he will suffer less.
So I'm going to put myself out so this guy...
So this guy will have a meal. Yeah.
You know what's crazy is I think that's the true understanding of a faith-based life. And I think oftentimes those who claim to live a faith-based life never come to that conclusion. And oftentimes those who claim they don't live a faith-based life find themselves doing acts just like that, but then they give credit to where it came from to someone else.
Right.
When like in reality, like, well, no, you've always had that goodness was written in your heart. Like you felt led to do it and you did it. That came from somewhere.
Yeah.
I just don't think it was Mother Earth or, you know what I mean?
The universe.
Yeah, I'm not even saying that to be funny. I'm just there are so many people out here who even believe in this whole new age spiritual movement who really have good hearts. They really would do...
And do nice things.
They would genuinely, like the example you just gave, they would come along, see somebody on the side of the street and they'd be like, man, this guy's hungry. I just won't eat. I'll just let him eat and I'll, get something later on.
See a bad car accident and go in there and risk your... The car's on fire. Go and reach for that person inside there and risk your own life. It could blow up, but you did it to save that person. And if it did blow up, well, that was the risk. Mm. And, it happens, though. It happens. I've heard of people who gave mouth-to-mouth to a person who was passed out and they had thrown up on themselves, gave them mouth-to-mouth, and then got, hepatitis... Because the person was a drug addict and was having a seizure and
But they just didn't even none of that ran through their mind because their natural reaction
save a life
was you're a hero. Somebody else is way better than me at this. And I gotta follow them instead of just like, man, I I could do some pretty cool things on by myself.
I think what we just...
And I have some pretty cool people around me that do some pretty cool things too.
What we just gave is something you can do in the midst of the chaotic moments is go instead of worrying, which is fruitless, helps nobody. Instead, go into a place where you have influence. And that is what we just talked about. Instead of worrying and fretting over how bad the world's become, go and do something good that will have ripples that will affect the world in positive ways.
Well, and in a season of giving thanks, doesn't that all really start with an attitude of gratitude?
God gave you not because you deserve it, but because he loves you. And in turn, he said, now I ask you to love others as I have loved you and to be kind to others who are in need.
I know I'm undeserving, so thank you. As always, this has been Blindly Obvious. If we can see it, you can see it too. You can visit our website at www.blindlyobvious.com, where you can catch up on past episodes, as well as learn a little bit about us. We are so happy that you're here, and hope these are just the conversations you've been looking for. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe and share the word. Peace, love, and God bless. And remember, the eyes mean nothing if the mind is blind.